Steph Thompson, founder of the London Voice Boutique. Welcome to LVB Presents. We're a voiceover agency based in Soho, London, and in this second series, we're going to take you on a little journey behind the scenes with some of our actors. But also, I'm going to take you on a detour and talk to people on the production side of the industry to give you some of the fun stories and advice from the other side.
Hello, today I'm happy to welcome Glynis Barber and Adrian Scarborough, both hugely successful actors, and I'm thrilled you both agreed to come on the podcast. Thank you. Hi Glynis and hi Adrian, how are you both?
I'm quite well, how are you?
I'm very well actually.
I know we've got a nice cup of tea.
Great. Oh good.
Yeah, got Earl Grey in my hand, it's looking good.
We're fine.
So, both of you are obviously represented by LVB and you've both done a lot of voiceover work over the years, but I wanted to talk to you both about the documentary side of things, because that's not an area that I've covered yet in the podcast, and it is slightly different from your average commercial or animation voices that you have done. So can you just tell me a little bit about which documentaries you do or have done over the years? And I'll start with the ladies first, Adrian.
Quite right, too.
Oh dear, this could be long. Because, yes, I've done nothing but documentaries, I think, for the last few years, because I was given a couple of documentaries and then it sort of snowballed, and then I ended up doing loads of documentaries from home in lockdown, which was brilliant, and then it's sort of continued. So I've done a lot of chocolate documentaries.
Yes.
Yeah, I've done series after series of chocolate documentaries, The Wonderful World of Chocolate, Hotel Chocolat. I've done cruising.
Yes.
Very expensive cruises. And then sort of one-offs, like I did one on Tiffany's, and I think
You've done a lot of royal family ones.
I've done loads on the royal family. I think I do actually have a PhD in the royal family at this stage. and now, currently, and on my way, is I'm now doing various palaces and royal residences, which I actually find very interesting.
Yes, I bet.
Because I love history.
Yeah.
So, you know, the history of, you know, who built them and all the various people who've...
You must have learned so much over the years.
I have. I really, really have.
That's brilliant. And what about you, Adrian?
Well, I was going to say, one of the lovely things that I find about doing them is the things you learn along the way.
Yeah.
Which can be so gloriously random.
Yes.
I did one about beer production.
Oh, really?
In the United Kingdom, which, you know, was a particular interest of mine anyway.
Yeah.
But the information that I garnered about how beer is made and, you know, all of that sort of stuff is rather wonderful. I did one about the Grand Union, the building of the Grand Union Canal.
Oh, wow.
The development of the Grand Union Canal, which actually runs by my front door, which is rather lovely, through Hertfordshire. So that was very brilliant to find out lots more about that sort of thing. Hampton Court.
Oh, did you?
Which was very interesting, and not, in fact.
Why not?
It was lacking in detail, I felt.
You wanted to know more.
I wanted to know more, yeah.
Yeah, they do that. And I also, the other thing that used to frustrate me on the Royals is I went, come on, dig the dirt here.
Yeah, they're not allowed to get saying.
We know there's more going on, but they're not giving it.
No.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No.
Hampton Court. That's my territory, Hampton Court.
No, but I think that's a really interesting one, because I think that often sometimes the information is very, very scant.
Yes.
And sometimes there's sort of too much. I've been in situations where I've sort of gone, are we bombarding people here with an awful lot of information? Yes. And then the reverse is true, where people kind of go, do you want to say that? Is it all right? And you kind of go, well, it's your programme.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to say anything about the scripts, or do you feel like the scripts are written, they've been approved, that's it, you can't move off that?
Well, often you're working to time anyway, so sometimes what they write just simply
it's too
will
long.
Not fit.
Yeah, it just won't fit. Or
however many times you do it,
or there's like a huge gap. So they think, so sometimes, you know, you've got a paragraph this long and this amount of time, and you have to talk so fast, and you know, perhaps you could just get rid of a few words, because I can fit it in, but I would be talking so fast.
Yeah.
And then you almost go into slow motion for the next line because there's a huge big gap. But they often do. I find that that they'll tweak and they'll cut things out as or put them in as I'm doing it. Do you find that?
I do indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is quite nice sometimes to be part of the editing process as well.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm quite cheeky because I'll often say, do you want to say it that way? I mean, you could just say that.
And will they
I'm
go
so
with
glad it? To hear that.
I'm a notorious tweaker.
Are you? Yeah, that's
I have a very bad reputation for tweaking.
But also sometimes they put words, you know, sometimes they'll give you tongue twisters and you kind of just have to point them out and just kind of go, that is a really, really
hard,
convoluted and difficult way of saying what is in fact a very simple sentence. If we just ditch that word and that word, it'll all come out so
and
much
better.
And
will they allow you to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, generally speaking.
And also, do you find, and they'll sometimes, I mean, you know, the writing isn't always flowing, shall we say. And they will write a paragraph without any punctuation. So you do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You do know
it. You really have to work out where it should be. And also, unbelievably long sentences.
Right.
And the thing is, they forget you have to breathe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
They're paying you not to breathe.
Yes. Like they'll do anything, they'll go out of their way to not use a full stop. And you kind of go, it's so simple, just put a full stop there and then we'll carry on with the next sentence, please. Yes. Trying to find, the thing I love is trying to find drama in it.
Right.
Sometimes in the most banal things.
I haven't tried that.
Oh,
I'm going to try that today.
You know how sometimes, you know, so somebody will ask you to sort of be very dramatic about a particular thing, even though it's not, you know, like it's 6 o'clock in the morning and...
You're talking about beer.
Yes, exactly. It's 6 o'clock in the morning and the stables have run into a real problem.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know. The Shire horse's tails are dirty, or something like that, and you have to make it sound life and death.
But that's where your acting skills come in, right?
Yeah, but sometimes it's so delightfully funny.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So, well, which are the... Okay, so that leads me nicely into my next question. Which are the documentaries that you have enjoyed the most?
Well... When I started my documentary life with the one about chocolate, I did rather naively presume that I would get there and they would have chocolate for me.
Oh, really?
And they didn't. And I was so crestfallen and I was so upset, visibly upset,
really,
that the producer went out and bought me some chocolate.
That's hilarious.
No, really. And I said, because I think that was the Hotel Chocolat one, and I love Hotel Chocolat. And I went, goodness, they're basically going to have, you know, how naive. They're going to have all this chocolate in the studio. And I went, have you got chocolate? They went, no, we've had some. We don't. I said, really? Really? And I mean, I could barely function. I could barely do the documentary because I was so upset. I'm just nipping out for a moment.
She
went and came back with chocolate. And then she was so sweet, that particular lady, because I did a few of them. And every time I turned up, she said, here's your chocolate.
Oh, really?
And she'd gone on her own, you know, dime and bought me a chocolate.
That's so funny.
But
she's probably like, well, Glynis, she has
she demands chocolate.
Yeah. Take out the blue ones. Oh, that's so funny.
Years ago, I did a commercial for Callard and Bowser Toffees. Do you remember them?
Oh, I do.
Callard
and
their
Bowser
Nougat. Toffees.
Oh, their Nougat was good.
And I was inundated with the wretched things.
Oh, really?
It was when they started doing them in tubes rather than in tins, and it was a big sort of promotion thing. And and I got sent home with a box full. I should send them the bill for my dental work subsequently, really.
Do they still exist?
I don't know that they do, actually.
I mean, that's part of my childhood.
Oh, really?
I remember those and the Nougats. I used to love their Nougats. Yeah, they were really... Oh, I'd forgotten about those.
Yes,
I think you should have demanded beer on your, beer
making.
Yes, can
you imagine?
Yeah.
Where's my beer? Starting a session at 10 in the morning.
Exactly. Where is it? Line it up.
Yeah.
So have you got any sort of funny stories from any of these recordings that you can share with us, or have we NDA'd everything and we're not allowed to talk about anything? I'm sure there are.
Well,
apart from turning up and demanding chocolate.
I mean, lockdown was pretty funny.
Yes.
Because I did a lot of documentaries in lockdown in the garden shed.
Yes.
And, you know, there wasn't a lot of sound in lockdown, which was great because there were no planes. There was a lot of bird song.
Yes.
So we're going to have to go again because of those birds. And then the other enemy was rain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and as you know, there was, I mean, for the first 3 months of lockdown, it was like a full-time job. I was doing, you know, I was sometimes doing multiple documentaries a day.
Yeah.
And I'd call Steph and I said, Steph, it's raining.
I know.
I'm about to start and it's raining. And Steph would go, oh my God, rain, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then the engineer, yeah, I can hear it. I can hear it. And
it was so stressful.
And I used to take all the pillows from, you know, because I wasn't soundproofed. It was literally the shed. And then I'd surround myself. I used to send Steph photos.
Yeah.
Surrounded. I'd make, around the mic, I would sort of create, you know, this cushioned, a little fortress of pillows. So, all, you know.
It was quite stressful, though, because it was all related to the weather. And generally, we had a lovely 2020.
We did, actually.
But, of course, the one day Glynis had three documentaries booked in, it was like, oh my God, the rain, what are we going to do?
That was
pretty stressful. But
and then there was the time in lockdown. So I'd done The Wonderful World of Chocolate and they were sort of quite popular. So they decided, let's do The Wonderful World of Cake. So then they did six documentaries on The Wonderful World of Cake. And then I remember the guy called you and he said, right, we'd like her to do them all in one day.
Yes.
Yes. Like, okay, my voice is pretty hardy and, you know, I have done two documentaries in a day, but six?
Yeah.
Oh my good. I mean, that would take, it would take 15 hours.
Yeah, it was insane.
Anyway, we talked him out of that
one.
Yeah,
we did.
And
it was a bit much.
I think I still ended up doing three.
I think you did, yeah.
Did your shed over the course of COVID become more and more lavish? Did you sort of take more and more things in? Did you have, you know...
Oh, it is. It
a has change
been,
of costume.
It has been rebuilt now. It is, you know, like a proper room.
Is it like
but
a proper...
it's still, it, you know, it's a proper office now, but it's still not soundproofed, unfortunately.
She was demanding cake be sent round, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, send round the soundproofing.
Yeah, exactly.
But COVID was an extraordinary thing for that, wasn't it? I mean, I got together with several other actors who live in my town. And we all, everybody brought their spare duvets and we all kind of converted this tiny little office that my wife used to use.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. It worked out really well for us.
For voiceover stuff,
and radio. And it got to the stage where, you know, we had to phone one another up to sort of say, no, I'm in there. I'm in there.
That's
it really got, you know, it was great.
The
work was so forthcoming. It really, well, I mean, a lot of actors really... survived on that and that alone.
We had to.
Yeah, it was the only thing going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was like 2 months lockdown, where we all sort of slightly looked at each other going, what do we do now? Thinking, is this the end of my business? You know, and then suddenly it was like, set up from home. And I spent a good month just explaining to people how to set up from home. And honestly, the pillows and the duvet, I mean, Glynis was literally underneath this setup, which was just insane. But now we can laugh at the time.
Well, I did get a bit worried because then I thought, because, you know, everybody's, you know, since lockdown, everybody wants to do everything from home. And I thought, oh, God. Well, if they, you know, now I've got the planes. I've got the planes over every 2 minutes. And I haven't built a studio, so I'm still in my pillow situation. And I thought, this is not going to work for me if you know. But anyway, at least we're back in the studio now. So.
God, yeah.
A massive big up for sound production studios as well. Because they really did do some extraordinary things in a very short space of time.
Yeah.
I did, you know, radio dramas for the BBC.
Really?
Where everybody was in disparate parts of the country.
Amazing.
You know, somebody in Wales, somebody in the Lake District. And, you know, you listen to it at the end of the day and kind of go, do you know, I'd never know.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, they've got the thing, you just go on your computer and, you know, you're talking to the producer and you're talking, you know, to the engineer.
Yeah.
And it's almost like being in the booth in some ways.
Well, it is, it was
unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Lastly, on documentaries, I just wanted to ask you, you know, what are the main differences that you find recording a documentary versus an animation or a commercial voice? Because you guys have both done a lot of all of that. And what advice would you give to someone going to do a documentary for the first time? Because it's actually quite hard getting into the documentary industry. So you guys have established yourself, but what would you say to someone going in for the first time.
Don't be afraid to have a dialogue in the room.
Right.
Because as we've just said, yes. if there's, you know, if you simply can't fit what you've got to say into, yes. you know, don't get in a panic about it. Just have a chat with them.
And yeah.
I do think the dialogue side of things is pretty important, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think do your prep because, I mean, I always do, and I mean, you know, it's not that time consuming, but I always read it out loud to myself before. Because as I said, you know, sometimes, you know, a sentence will be quite clunky or sometimes it'll be very, very long. And it's not always punctuated. So breathing is very, very important. So I think the breath has to be used as punctuation. So if you take a breath, that's like a comma. So your breath has to come in the right place. So when you have a long sentence, you almost have to work out where you yeah. can take that breath. And if you haven't done that prep, those long sentences are going to take you by surprise or even making sense of the sentence. And it always amazes me because the producers will always say to me that they find that most actors who go in have not prepped it, which I find
really?
Amazing, but they say that to me all the time. They say people just come in and also they said they're quite grumpy, like they're sort of doing a bit of a favour or they haven't prepped it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have so many actors who want to do more documentary reads, and so yeah. I'd be surprised if they turned up and hadn't read. I would be, the first thing I'd say is like, really prep. You can't always prep a commercial. You don't know what the script is, but you do get the script.
You do.
It is important, and you do have that
opportunity. And also, it just makes it so much easier in the room, like, you know, it'll go smoothly if you've prepped, and it'll also be quicker because they always say to me, you know, they always say to me, my goodness, you know, you're so quick.
Yeah,
because, you know, I can rattle out a documentary in, I mean, I've actually done one in an hour, but or in an hour and a half if it's 90 minute, in 2 hours tops.
Yeah,
and you know, they go, you know, people are usually
three to four
bit longer.
Yeah,
but it's because I've prepped it, and you know, so I know what to expect.
I think that's really important. Yeah. Very helpful. On a more general note, I was going to say, how do you prepare for a voiceover session? But I'm talking about, have you got any rituals? Like, you know, some people sort of say they don't have dairy before a session. Or do you have any rituals, Adrian, that you'd like to share with us?
I do have rituals. Most of the time, if I'm coming into town, I'll be on my bicycle.
Right.
So I tend to hum and sing a lot as I come down the way. Yes, once I'm off the train, I'm kind of, nobody can hear me because the traffic's so loud and, you know, well, maybe they can hear me. I've never stopped to find out. But yes, so I do tend to do a bit of that. What else do I do? Tongue twisters are always good. Make sure you've got plenty of water in there with you. I do like a cup of tea in there. I quite like, but I can drink my tea at many different temperatures.
Right.
So I don't mind cold tea.
Oh, gosh. That's just not acceptable.
So I can have a cup there for, you know, an hour and a half.
Oh, and, stewed and cold.
Yeah, and it'd still be all right.
Oh,
don't bother me.
Well, do you know what I mean? I don't really do any voice work before that, and, you know, unless my voice is feeling a bit rough. So I don't do that. I will make sure I do eat at least a little something, because I don't always eat breakfast, but I'll always make sure I eat something, otherwise you get the rumbly in the middle of the voiceover, and loads of water.
Yeah.
I'm constantly drinking water while I'm doing it. Yeah.
No, it is wise to have
not just for your voice, but just keeping hydrated in a very small studio.
Yeah.
With, you know,
they can get quite hot in there, isn't it?
They can get hot or they can get cold and dry. And
Yeah,
fair enough. Brilliant. What's the most unusual direction you've ever been asked to perform in a voiceover booth? Have you got something that's slightly out of the ordinary?
I did a commercial, I won't say what it was for, but it was sort of trying out various ideas and various voices for a llama, a speaking llama. And I tried everything. And they were still not quite convinced with my llama. And it's that thing where you kind of go, I think I'm spent. I think I've given you we've been the length and breadth of the country geographically. We've been abroad to several different continents, and it's still not quite there. can you give me more llama? I need to visualize llama. And in the end, I just sort of said, I think my idea of llama and your idea of llama are two very different things. Yeah. So what's your idea of a llama? And he actually was quite helpful. And we did end up finding a common ground, which was going back to the first voice that I did.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that often?
But
the
I
way?
Find that a lot with this work is that often you can do sort of two or three takes at the beginning, and chances are they'll go back to the beginning.
You'll
go around the houses for 45 minutes, but ultimately you'll end up back where you started.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of animation actually. I'm not sure if I've done any. But I know, you know, with commercials, it's always a tricky situation. You know, a big makeup company did those campaigns for. And there would be a lot of people in the room or in the room and online.
Yep.
So you've got the ad people, you've got the client, you've got the producers, you've got the technical team. So you've got 10 different people giving you direction.
Yeah.
And it's all conflicting.
Yes.
But they all want you to do what they're saying. Yeah. I remember having a few sessions like that. Yes. And that was... And the direction they're giving you, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you'd given quite a good spontaneous read to begin with. And now, okay, we want you to go up on that line, down on that line, sideways on that line, happy on that word, but a little down on that word. Okay.
Really,
and then you try
hard.
And do it, and it sounds so stilted. And then, as you say, they end up going, yeah, actually, the first one, that was really good. Let's go with that.
That's funny. So, I've been in those sessions, I'm afraid, Glynis.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about there.
I do.
I think it's really interesting, though, that actors' instincts are often correct.
Yeah.
You know, not bigging us up too much.
I think you're right.
But, you know.
I think that
if you've done lots, I think you do have a sense for what's required and what's needed.
But I think when you have that many people in a room, they all have a different idea, and they all need to make you jump through that hoop to then go, oh no, you were right.
But they kill the spontaneity in a way. But I mean, when it's a commercial and, you know, there's a, you know, it's a big campaign, I understand. But I also think, you know, often the people giving you the notes are not necessarily directors.
No.
You know, it could be an ad man or something.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to be heard. Yeah. And everyone wants to have their voice and put their two cents in. So, yeah, those can be, do you know what I mean? They all want to have their say and their little moment.
Yeah.
And, those can be really difficult ones to navigate, to be honest.
Trying to work out exactly if they're on the same page or not.
Yeah.
Okay, if this is my sort of like dinner party guest sort of question, who would you most like to share a booth with? It's one of those where you'd be like, in an ideal world, anyone, who would you most like to be in a voiceover session with?
Well, having just met you, I think this would be quite fun.
I would be very happy with Adrian, I have to say, especially if he does his llama.
Oh yes, for sure. I want to hear the llama.
There'd be lots of
tea. All want to hear the llama now.
I can tell you who I wouldn't want to be in a session
with. Are we allowed to say that?
Well, I was once in a radio studio with Anne Reed, and we didn't get anything done all afternoon. Oh my goodness, we were just so bad for each other.
Really?
I mean, it just got stupidly giggly. It was so very, very silly. Patrick Barlow as well. Do you know Patrick?
No.
Oh my God, don't get me anywhere.
Oh really? Is that
the two of
just
us
chat?
Simply can't focus or concentrate at all. Bill Nye, I love.
Oh yes.
The effortlessness of Bill Nye, I think, is very, very wonderful.
Have you ever worked with him?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, glorious.
So he'd be fun to be.
Oh, he's just delightful. Yeah.
I don't often share my booth.
No,
I'm used to just, you know, being a solitary little thing.
Me, myself, and I.
I think the only time, actually, I'd forgotten that I do audio books sometimes, so then I might find myself in a studio and they've got, you know, the actors dot around sort of playing the different characters. But anybody who's funny, that's
it's not gonna work.
Start laughing. I mean, just put giggly actors together and it's absolute nightmare.
Well, my last question I ask everyone, if you may or may not do this, but it's 5 o'clock on a Friday night and you've just finished a voiceover session, where would you go in Soho? And don't say home.
I never finish in Soho at 5 o'clock.
Would that you have gone, if, where would you go? Shopping?
Where should we go? Should we go to the pub?
We could go to the pub. I quite like, I tell you where I like going is the Cork, do you know the Cork and Bottle? Which is just opposite the Wyndham's Theatre. There's a little walk through to Leicester Square.
That's been there for years.
And it's been there for years and years and years.
I haven't been in there in decades, but I have some funny memories in there.
Basement room. Yes. And it has lots of little nooks and crannies and a little cave where you can kind of hang out. And the wine is always, the wine list is immaculate.
Amazing.
But
sounds
so
good.
Is the French cheese.
Is oh, really? Oh, wine
oh,
and cheese.
Oh, my goodness.
The perfect yes. combo.
The perfect combination.
The perfect combo.
Yeah, because if you've been avoiding dairy all day,
yeah.
you, you can stock up again.
You can. Oh, well, yeah. like, that's a good one to know.
I thought it was only yeah, singers like who had to avoid dairy.
Well, voiceovers as well, but...
I don't avoid dairy. I eat dairy and then I go in the booth.
You're such a rebel. That's against everything I've told everyone.
Is it? First time. I mean, I know, you know, when I was in Beautiful, the only non-singer, everyone said, I can't have dairy, can't have dairy. I'm eating cheese right now.
I love that. So there you go. All the advice we've been giving all these years out the window, according to Glynis. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been brilliant and really helpful. So thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant.
And that's it for the show. Hope you liked it. And if you did, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. LVB Presents was presented by me, Steph Thompson, and produced by Mike Hanson for Pod People Productions, and recorded by Sean Dios at Jungle Studios in Soho, London. See you next time.